You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show, rated the number one podcast of all time.
Of all time. Make sure you're ready, because this is the podcast where you are guaranteed to learn virtually everything.
All right, everybody, you're listening to The Brian Callen Show. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Go to audiblepodcast.com/BCS to get your free download. I use Audible every day. I live in LA. I drive, and it's a great way to get books read. And talking to my father, who's one of the most well-read people I know, and he was recommending How to Win Any Argument. And we talk about it on the podcast that I just did with him. And it's by Robert Mayer. You can get it on Audible. And basically, it breaks down how people approach an argument. Everybody has their assumptions. Three sides to every argument, right? Your side, my side, and the truth, to quote Robert Evans. And what's interesting about, you know, I always tell young people, immerse yourself in the best that's been thought and said. There are still great books out there being written. And the great part is you can listen to them now. So, no excuse not be well read when you got audible.com. And remember, go to audiblepodcast.com/BCS to get your free book today. All right, everybody, this is the Brian Callen Show. Very quickly, I will be at the I'll be at the West Palm Beach Improv May 10th, 11th, and 12th. And then I will be in Portland at Helium Comedy Club May 16th, 17th, 18th, and I think maybe even the 19th. Check my website, briancallen.com, and I'll let you know. I'll be bringing heat. I can't wait. I'm doing a new hour. I'm getting ready for my new hour, and I've never been better. I feel good. So there it is. I have two guests today, one John Romanello and Adam Bornstein, both longtime writers and for different magazines like Men's Health, and also guys who are fitness aficionados. They're sitting across from me. They've got shoulders for days, smooth skin, full heads of hair. I'm producing estrogen as I speak, and I'm a straight man, I think. At least I thought I was until now. They've written a book that I just read, which I really liked, and I'm gonna read it out. It's Man 2.0, Engineering the Alpha. Balance your hormones, build more muscle, burn more fat, have more sex. A real world guide to an unreal life. Foreword by Arnold Schwarzenegger. I just read the book, and I've read a lot of these books. And I probably know more than the average actor, at least, about nutrition. And just because I'm on stage 3 hours a day, and when I'm on 3 hours a night, when I'm performing, and I'm really physical, I sweat through two shirts. So I can't have a breakdown, can't get sick, I can't lose my voice, I can't, you know, I've just got to be physically there. So I, a long time ago, investigated what it's like and how to eat. And I started reading books like The 4-Hour Body, who I know you reference in your book, Tim Ferriss, who's done the podcast, and you know, so on and so forth. And one of the things that you start to realize very quickly is that and what I liked about your book was that the sort of common medical orthodoxy that your doctor gives you is so far off the mark. And by the way, so is the USDA's recommendation for how to eat breakfast. For example, if they tell you if you want to lose weight, you should have Special K cereal, skimmed milk, a banana, and orange juice, which spikes your insulin, just gets you hungry 2 hours later for that muffin and more insulin-rich, insulin-producing food. So, anyway, welcome to the Brian Callen Show, Adam Bornstein and John Romanello. Is it Romaniello?
It's just Romanello. The eye is silent. It's tricky.
One of those annoying fucking eyes.
Just hanging out in the middle, so there, annoying. Screwing things up for everybody.
It's like Brian Callen, and it's spelled Colin. And yeah. I just used to hate it. So let's talk about the book for a second. I like that it was, you dispel a lot of myths. And so much of it, I've experimented so much with my body. And so much of what you're talking about really hits the mark. And so what got you to write the book in the first place?
Well, there was a few things. with regard to the specific information in there with the testosterone and the insulin, these are things that have affected me personally, and we can touch on that a little bit later. And so I thought that there was a story that needed to be told, because with regard to testosterone specifically, guys are experiencing low T younger and younger and younger. And people, nobody talks about this. The only awareness that is created for this problem comes from the pharmaceutical industry. You know, there's, you see, you're watching the Super Bowl and then there's a commercial. It's always in black and white for some reason. There's a good looking older dude. And it's like, do you not feel like yourself anymore? And then, you know, the pharmaceutical companies want to generate awareness so that they can sell you a product.
Sure.
And we want to generate awareness so that we can solve a problem, because not to say that those products don't work or that for some people they aren't necessary, but just the surgery should be a last resort after physical therapy and a number of other manual therapies. Any medication should be the last resort, and that includes and is particularly relevant to putting exogenous hormones in your body. And so we really wanted to teach people how to sort of optimize and maximize these things naturally through diet and training. Mm. And food. Yeah. It's the crazy thing is that, as you said, like, your doctor does not recommend these things. You walk in, you have a problem, they prescribe you a pill.
Well, but here's the bottom line. Doctors don't live physical lives.
That's
I can
correct.
Look at both your bodies, and I know you guys use your own bodies as experiments. I mean, you have, over the years, you're both in your 30s, you've learned how to optimize your performance, your physical performance. And what's interesting about diet and this stuff is a lot of this stuff comes out of the bodybuilding world, I think. You know, people don't realize that, but a lot of sort of this whole talk about low glycemic, high glycemic index foods came out of the bodybuilding world. Am I right about that?
That's correct. And I think what you want to look at here is that when you look at those bodybuilders who are in this tremendous shape, they don't have the issues necessarily that we talk about. They don't struggle burning fat. They don't struggle building muscle. And yes, there's a whole separate conversation about the illegal drugs that people take. And let's be honest, you're going to be hard-pressed to find a bodybuilder that hasn't injected themselves with something.
Right.
But what we did is we kind of panned out and looked at what are the issues that real guys, those who don't use drugs, really suffer from. And it is the burning fat. It is the building muscle. It is sex drive. It's low energy. Mm. It's just feeling like shit and hating your life.
Mm-hmm.
And then we tried to really create this flow chart of where do these problems derive from and see if there was a common denominator. And when we looked at everything, the common denominator was hormones. And if you view hormones more like your body's ecosystem,
mm-hmm.
or if you want, it's the engine that makes your body run correctly.
Right.
If your engine is broken, it doesn't matter what fuel you're putting in there, it's not going to run too well. And that's what's happening to people. The engine is broken and they don't realize it. So you even have guys going out there who are exercising or trying to eat the right way, but because their hormones are so messed up, they don't see any of the benefits, which makes it harder and harder for them to move forward. And they're believing all of these myths and lies that are only perpetuating the problem. And then you just end up with a bunch of guys who are fat and lazy because they just throw in the towel and say, fuck it, I can't get better.
That's one of the things that Gary Taub in his book, Good Calories, Bad Calories, mm-hmm. and Why We Get Fat, and Tim Ferriss also talks about is and a couple other people like Robert Lustig, who's a professor of endocrinology over at Cornell University. He's got a great lecture on the dangers of high fructose corn syrup. You guys are nodding, so you probably know what I'm talking about. It's about an hour and a half long. It's very important to listen to. But the bottom line is that food with people – people in the know, microbiologists and people who follow this stuff like yourselves, are food should be considered a drug, and calories, not all calories are equal. Calories have very different hormonal responses in the body. A bowl of broccoli and lean grass-fed meat has a much different hormonal response than does a bowl of Wonder Bread and fucking caramels.
Yeah,
right.
Man,
I mean,
is that Wonder Bread good.
Both delicious in their own way.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right. So,
What do we do about that, though? I mean, you guys have this book, and I've read it, and there's if you follow what goes on in this book, you're going to be way healthier, and you're going to have the body you want. There's no question about that.
Right.
The problem is, how do you deal with people who, you know. You know, like you said, people like their sweets. Sweets are addictive. We have a food industry that makes money off of getting you fat.
Yeah,
I mean, I hate to be cynical, but
it's absolutely not cynical.
That's the truth.
It's the unfortunate truth is that the food companies make more money by keeping you addicted to crappy foods, and unfortunately, the medical community makes more money off of you being fatter, and the insurance companies and all these other things. So this is like this cyclical, incestuous thing where these negative entities, or probably what are positive entities, are feeding off each other in a very negative way, and you're the victim. So what to do? I don't think that any food is fundamentally bad all the time. I think that there's a time and a place for everything. Mm-hmm. You know, we're Italians, right? And to say that lasagna is bad or that pizza is bad across the board, like some people in, let's say, the paleo community do, I think that's doing a disservice and is sort of ignoring the cultural importance of food. This is like if you go to New York and you didn't see the Empire State Building or didn't have pizza, you didn't go to New York if you were a tourist.
And
like,
by the way, the Italians and a lot of these cultures that eat a lot of heavy breads and things, they're not dying in the street, okay?
Right.
Americans get you know, puritanical.
Yeah.
About these fads, you know, all of a sudden omega-3s are good for you and they're in everything. We're adding them to our
fucking milk, bread.
Yeah. I mean, it's so annoying.
Right.
That where what you're talking about is balance. And I think you said something very interesting, the cultural importance of food. So keep going.
So I think that's really important because what a culture puts forward in its food is literally what they're saying. This is what we do better than anyone else in the world. New York pizza, New York bagels, you know, California, like Southern California Mexican food. These are things that everybody knows about a given place. And that's really important because part of the reason to be healthy is to stick around long enough to have a greater experience in your life. And for me, that includes experiencing culture in its fullest.
Book is very ambitious because your book isn't just about – your book really is a call to guys to become – the alpha that they want, and you define what an alpha is. It's not somebody who can kick your ass in a bar. An alpha is a guy who is, in fact, somebody who gives more than he takes and all these great things. So there are a lot of life lessons. Yeah, I love that you reference Joseph Campbell. I always tell young men, start with Joseph Campbell. He was a biblical and Eastern mythology scholar, and he compares the two. I've read everything he's ever written.
Me too. I actually wrote my thesis on Campbell.
Well, you did. Yeah. It's great because you clearly have – you reference not only A Hero of a Thousand Faces but Vogel's book
The Writer's Journey, Mythic Structure for Writers. That's the book I always recommend to people who are just getting into Campbell because I feel that – it's not even that Campbell can be a little bit dry. It's that if you don't have a background in mythology and haven't really studied myths in general, then The Hero with a Thousand Faces can sort of be a little bit obtuse simply because – Campbell makes a lot of his points through comparisons and examples, and if you don't understand why those examples are cogent, it's a little bit drier.
You've got to have his background of the Bible and the Old Testament as
Whereas Vogler uses movies and TV shows, and that is a much more accessible way to learn Campbell for most people. And so going from Writer's Journey to Hero with a Thousand Faces is usually what I recommend to Campbell Noviets.
Because in a way, this book is a call to take the hero's journey. In a way, that's really what it is. I've never read a book about hormones. That's what I kind of loved about it. You guys are young guys, and I'm older than you. So it was kind of endearing to feel, not in a condescending way. It just was a very ambitious book in that you guys were like, hey, you got to have a reason for why you're doing these things. That's a very important thing that people don't realize. It's one thing to say, you know, get in shape. Well, that I need something to get in shape for. Mm-hmm. There's got to be passion and reason behind it. There's an Israeli guy named Ido Portal. I don't know if you know who he is, but he's got this really cool video about movement for movement's sake. You're working out, you're doing all this stuff, but can you do a backflip? Can you use your body? Can you enjoy just the usage of your body? Can you do all things? Are you gymnastic? Are you strong? If you're a gymnast, how's your vertical? And he kind of, his sort of passion is the fact that if you have a body and you exercise, do it for a reason. Do it so that you can just be, there's a freedom in movement, you know? What I liked about your book was it really was sort of, hey, you're not living to your potential, and part of it and most of it is because you don't feel good. You don't feel you're not at your optimal. Your hormones are all whacked. Your body isn't where you want it because you don't know how to eat. You have subscribed to all these different myths like eat six times a day. Breakfast is the most important meal, and all these things that we grew up with, all these sort of like truisms that we grew up with, and you guys kind of go, if you look at the science, let me simplify this. This is all bullshit.
Right.
Get back to who you really are, which is your strongest self, and there's a philosophy behind it.
So one thing I just kind of want to touch on there is that the reason that this book is so important is that because Adam and I have a unique position, or I guess unique positions, at sort of the forefront of the industry with regard to our platform. Mm. And so what we were able to do in the book is, you know, I believe that all of us in any who achieve any sort of success stand on the shoulders of giants.
You're quoting Newton, by the way. Thank you. And don't worry about that.
What we were able to do is, because we have such intimate access to some of the best experts in the world, we were able to pull on their work in their very specific niches. So we have a lot of work with regard to hormones, which comes from a guy named Charles Poliquin, who, you know, has been doing this stuff for years. He's got a whole certification called BioSig that essentially talks about fat storage patterns with regard to hormonal imbalances. We talk a lot about intermittent fasting, and we're able to quote guys like Brad Pilon and Martin Birkin, who are really the godfathers of the intermittent fasting age. We talk about eating carbs at night, and that allows us to sort of draw on the work of John Kiefer, who a physicist turned nutritionist, who talks a lot about eating carbs at night. He has, you know, a book called Carb Backloading and another one called Carb Night. And so much of the information in the book is really our dissemination and our analysis and synthesis of these really, really high-level people who do just that one thing. Mm. You know, Kiefer is just, you know, the carbs at night guy, or Birkin is the fasting guy, or whatever. And so we're, because of our platform, we're able to take these things, synthesize them, and break them down for general accessibility to the average person.
Right.
And so that's why this book is really important, because it takes those really high-level concepts and makes them applicable and accessible.
And you guys, the book, once again, is Man 2.0, Engineering the Alpha. It's a pretty cool cover here. You got Da Vinci's man on it. Simplify things for me for a second. What are the things you see people doing? What are the things when you guys meet people who come to you for help and things? What are the three things you, or whatever, if there's a number, poor Rena, you hear a little static in the background. Nobody gives a shit, but my engineer Rena is dying, and she's trying to figure out where it's coming from. You know, you're acting like there's a bee in the room and you can't find it. Where is that fucking bee? Don't worry. We're good. Our conversation just overshadows any kind of what?
And also, he's Italian, and I see him wanting to use his hands.
Right, it's very difficult.
And I'm like, okay, let me fix this.
I'm a hand user as well.
I know.
He already hit me three times. It's all right.
I want you to be free to move.
I appreciate that. I will. No one can see us, but you guys don't realize I'm making all of my points.
Bring Brendan here. We got Brendan Schaub here.
Big B.
Schaub's been in like three of my podcasts now.
He
can't get
just
rid of the
shows
guy.
Up.
He just comes by.
That's a guy I'd like to look like. I played volleyball, and I caught a glimpse of both of us in the reflection of a car, and I was like, oh, who's the guy? He won. I look like I had rickets compared to him.
Yeah.
I call him Big Brown.
Big Brown is a big man.
Well, he's in a UFC heavyweight and played pro football at 6'5", 255, and a good-looking kid, too.
Right. It's almost unfair. Fuck that guy.
Smooth skin. You know, my nickname for him is Big Brown. Where's Big Brown? Anyway, we'll welcome in when we're done. You were saying, I think we were talking about...
We're going to try and simplify approach.
Well, what are the things that you see people doing wrong? Like men come in, what are they doing wrong typically? What's the average American
really
male?
Really, they're doing everything wrong. And that's why it's sometimes what they don't realize is, guys, when they hear hormones, they have two reactions. And one is, I don't have to worry about that until I'm 50, 60 years old, so it doesn't really matter. And number two is, if I'm going to do something about my hormones, someone get me a needle, find me a buddy, and let's start injecting stuff into my ass. And the reality is, neither of those are true. Guys' hormones over the last 20 years are decreasing. Decreasing at a rate of, if you look at the last 20 years, guys' hormone levels, their testosterone levels are 20% lower than they were 20 years ago, which is just tragic when you think about it, because it means men are becoming less manly.
Yeah.
And then not only are guys' testosterone levels on average lower, 20% lower, you have a quarter of guys who are even below the median level. So they are below average.
Right.
And this is, it's really just terrible, because your testosterone levels lead to everything from your ability to change your body to your energy levels, and even can lead to depression and just being down about your life. So it's understanding that as young as your 20s and as old as your 50s and 60s, this is something that's very, very relevant to you and that are controlled by daily behaviors. The first place we always start is sleep. And guys, we are notorious for not sleeping because we're hustling, we're working hard, we're getting by, because, you know, this is what we do. We're machines programmed to just kick ass.
I love that section of your book, how important sleep is. Man.
It's so important there was a study done at the University of Chicago, and what they did was they were just looking at guys who were sleeping. And what they found is, if you slept less than 6 hours a night in just 2 weeks, you had a 15% drop in testosterone. Right. Now, that might not seem like too much, but consider this.
That's huge.
It's a ton, and when you are 30 years old, your testosterone starts naturally decreasing 1% every year. That means by not sleeping well for 2 weeks, you speed up the aging process 15 years.
It's unbelievable.
It's insane. It's crazy. And then when you start thinking about, you were talking about, well,
and
what
I
do we
see
do
it
about?
A lot with guys, man. I they see don't it with sleep. Guys all the time. Well, I see a lot of guys just don't, they got a gut. They just don't have the drive. I right. see them, they just have, I can tell they have a low sex drive. They're not looking at girls.
Right. And the sleep is, it's killing everything. So you were talking earlier about, you know, how do we resist big food? Well, big food is a beast in and of itself, but we're not making it any easier and stuff. When you don't sleep, what also happens is you're triggering this hunger hormone, ghrelin, which is going to make you want more food. And not only are you going to want more food because you're sleeping less, there's some mind control going on. When you don't sleep enough, it triggers hormones in your brain that makes you want to grab a donut, makes you want to grab cookies. Hmm. So well, it's literally,
you know what's really
you're being controlled.
You know what's so interesting about that? The only time I want donuts and cookies and sweet shit is when I wake up because I got to go do radio in the morning and I've had 3 hours of sleep.
It's the worst.
I literally crave sugar.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
and I never do when I'm
And that's your body messing with you. So we are making it more difficult on ourselves that we already got enough of a battle with big food. But imagine if you didn't even control your own thoughts, that if you weren't doing this, you wouldn't even be craving it in the first place. And that's what people need to realize, that our bodies are these complex machines, and we are programming ourselves to, you know, do everything wrong.
So let's – so get more sleep.
Get more sleep.
The average person needs at least 7 hours. I need at least 7.5, man. When I'm working out, maybe even 8.
Yeah, absolutely. The more you get, the better. I mean, it's just a really unfortunate thing that if we could all sleep 9 hours, I think we would. Mm. But we're just – you know, we're always –
What about darkness in a room? How dark does the room have to be?
Depends on you and how well you sleep. The things that we have found and studies have shown have been most effective are not necessarily light-related. They're sound-related. And so white noise seems to be a little bit more important for creating sound sleep than, let's say, you know, blackout curtains. You should turn the lights off.
So white noise, so like the sound of the womb, the mother's heartbeat, like the way my son's 20 months old and we have a sound machine for him.
Right. Sound machines are huge for sleep. You know, just like turning on the ceiling fan, you'll always notice that you sleep a little bit better.
Yes.
And these, you know, this is just an evolutionary thing that comes down to us from when we needed to be on guard for predators. We're very prone to waking up out of sound sleeps at sudden sounds.
Yeah.
So I would say that definitely turning off the lights is important. Try not to fall asleep with the lights on. And then equally important is to eliminate electronic devices, not only from your immediate sleeping area, but also just try to cut them off about an hour or two before bedtime, because the type of LED lights that are used in computers, phones, iPads, all that stuff, that stimulates your brain and makes it more difficult to sleep, and it takes longer to fall into REM sleep because of those things. So those are the very simple fixes you could make.
Right.
You know, just trade your iPad for like a real fucking book. God forbid people would like
I'm
hold
I'm always
a physical...
reading my goddamn Kindle.
It's hard.
I
know. Well, Kindle is not as bad because of the e-ink.
Which you can get, by the way. You can get that Kindle. You can get the Engineering the Alpha on Kindle.
That was good. That was good.
I
like that. You did. That's exactly how you did.
Yeah.
So, those are some things that you could change. But the other things that, you know, outside of sleep, diet is huge. I'll let Adam talk a little about that. So we just want to talk about these three main components, right? It's lifestyle, and so there's sleep in there. There's nutrition, and then there's physical activity. So I'll kick it over to Adam. He'll talk a little about the very small but massive yield changes you can make.
Yeah, and we lay out an entire dietary program for people, 16 weeks.
A lot of fat.
The
I looked at a lot of
and
fat
this is,
in that
this
diet.
Is the key. You want fat. And a lot of people, we're trying to debunk this myth, and you would think it would be dead by now, but it still, you know, perseveres that the idea that eating fat will make you fat, and it's just not
sugar
true.
Makes
and
you
people
fat.
Need
oh, yeah,
to
it's
stop
not
with
the
it.
Fat.
It's not the fat. And people – but so people are like, oh, I'll eat fat, but I'll avoid saturated fat. And here's the problem with that. You need saturated fat if you're a man, and here's why. Saturated fat, like you find in red meat and
exactly.
eggs. So this is the manly stuff that you want to be eating, but you think it's about bacon. I'm going to tell you to go ahead and eat bacon, and I'm a Jewish man who keeps kosher, and I'm telling you to eat bacon. So you know
can
this
I,
is
can
legitimate.
Can I say it's funny? Tim Ferriss did a study of the people in the Blue Zone in Okinawa, the people who live like to 110 on average. Yeah, crazy. Yeah. The oldest live people. They eat a lot of pork fat, a lot of lard, a lot of pork and a lot of pork fat.
Yeah, no
How
Jews there.
No Jews there at all.
No.
But isn't that funny? He said they eat not a lot of rice, blue potatoes, and they eat a lot of pork and pork fat.
So two thumbs up on that. Yeah.
Saturated fat.
Saturated fat's so important. Because what it does is it raises cholesterol. Now, before everyone freaks out, you have good and bad cholesterol. And what saturated fat is going to do is going to increase your HDL. It's the good cholesterol.
Lipoprotein, right.
And then from there, HDL is the precursor to testosterone. So by eating this fat, You increase your good cholesterol, which will help kill the bad cholesterol. Just as importantly, you are boosting your testosterone production. And if you don't eat that fat, it's not going to happen. And even for guys who maybe don't worry as much about your testosterone production, how about this one for you? Your sperm quality and your ability for those guys to swim, they're based on polyunsaturated fats. So if you don't eat fats, you basically can go impotent.
Well, can I tell you what's funny is that one of the things they found with indigenous cultures, I just talked to a nurse who works up in the Arctic with all the Inuit people. They are 100% carnivorous. They do not eat any kind of vegetables. They live on whale fat, seal meat, whale meat, fish.
That sounds
God,
awesome.
I want to eat a whale so bad.
And they literally have zero cardiovascular issues, big problems with alcohol, but the ones that don't.
Yeah.
Are just have no issues health wise. It's really interesting. There are countless examples of that. I mean, if you look at the Maasai in Africa, that whole Bantu belt,
right. They
are primarily carnivorous.
All fats
and high. Like they'll drink 7 quarts of high fat milk a day, and their cholesterol is not high,
right.
And they're not fat. I've been to Africa twice. They're shredded, so especially the Maasai. So and it's only when they move into the cities like Nairobi, where they eat a maize-based, a corn-based diet, that they blow up and get really heavy and drink Coca-Cola and all that shit.
Yeah. Although the Western diet is really, really effective for making people fat and really, really ineffective for keeping.
So
people
sleep,
healthy.
Saturated fats, eat a lot of fat, eat a lot of like. So you're saying meat, bacon, and all
eggs,
that.
Eggs, avocados, coconut oil,
almond, raw almonds. You guys have a lot of almonds in your diet?
Oh, yeah.
Got a lot of coconut oil and coconut butter. Let me tell you, you can eat that stuff straight from a jar.
Yeah. Is that right?
Coconut butter is great.
I do it.
Butter is delicious. And coconut oil has all sorts of benefits outside of the
heart. What's the difference between coconut butter and coconut oil?
Coconut oil is just the fats, whereas coconut butter actually has some of the coconut meat in there. So it's more like a peanut butter spread as opposed to an oil.
Done.
Very good as well. So something else to consider that I sort of wanted to bring up, that you could really look at the effect of these high-fat diets on sort of a micro scale if you just look at people within the paleo community. And I recently had a discussion with our friend Rob Wolf, author of The Paleo Solution, who, if you haven't had him on the podcast, you absolutely should. Brilliant guy.
Rob Wolf is so smart.
Really?
Yeah, it's Rob with two Bs because he's that cool.
We need to write that down, Rob Wolf.
So Rob was recently giving a presentation, and we discussed that he has seen people who move from the standard American diet to, you know, where they're eating mostly high carb and low fat, to eating high fat and low carb, and the things that happen to them, not just like physiologically in terms of their appearance, but internally, are drastic. He sees decreases in cholesterol, decrease in triglycerides, increase in healthy cholesterol. So these people are doing all of the things that doctors tell you not to do.
Does this apply to women as well?
Yes, it does. So the women aren't going to necessarily get as many of the testosterone benefits, but they will still see them probably increase sex drive and increase confidence and all those things. But it's not quite as important for that. But just with regard to minimizing insulin, maximizing cholesterol balance, these things happen on a micro scale within that community all the time. And the paleo community can be a little bit dogmatic, and I think that there's some issues there, but they'll get there. They will. They'll absolutely get to a place of balance, and they're learning new things all the time.
Well, I think anytime, no grains, not even slow cooked oatmeal or brown rice. It's like, go fuck yourself. I need that sometimes.
Right. And that's what's great about someone like Rob, who is one of the leaders in the industry.
Yeah.
But he's one of the least dogmatic people you're going to meet.
Yeah. Usually you find the really smart ones are what's called a little moderate.
Yeah.
It's like I was in Canada, and there was this PhD in history, and she was a little chubby, and she was just kind of a really kind of smart girl. I was with her and her friends, and she was kind of very – I could tell she was very smart. I was kind of pontificating about diet from my L.A. point of view and how the reason I can be on stage for so long. And she goes, yeah. She goes, then there's also something called moderation. And I was like, shit.
Yes.
Although I do think that sugar – and I do think if you're eating moderate amounts of white bread and sugar and Coke, I don't think it's good for you.
No, I think that it's actually better to be good – like perfect 90% of the time and really bad 10% of the time than it is to be 80% good 100% of the time.
Well, you guys talk about the cheat day a little
bit,
the way
Tim Ferriss
does.
You boost your glycogen
one day a week and go crazy.
Exactly. So Tim is a really good friend of ours. I'll let Adam talk about the science of cheat days a little bit. But just to put this in perspective, if you're not really understanding this from the dietary perspective, I always like to use the example of alcohol. In terms of body composition, general health, if you're going to compare food to alcohol, it's actually better to have 7 drinks in one day than it would be to have 1 drink every day for 7 days.
Wow.
So, which isn't actually true with regard to alcohol. It's just that just to drive the point home,
right.
You know, because like getting drunk in one night and having a ton of fun is going to be better than, you know, having a glass and kind of getting a buzz every night.
Right.
It's better to condense these things. So that's what we talk about with food, getting all of the bad stuff. And it doesn't have to be bad stuff. It can be extra good stuff.
Mm.
But doing all of these things on one day has a lot of benefits.
Yeah. So, I mean, from a hormonal standpoint, again, it's kind of manipulating these hormones that shift, that we know that, say, you've got a lot of weight to lose. And it's really easy to lose those first 20 pounds, let's say. I mean, that's just you see people who are overweight and they start doing exercise and they drop it off. But then what happens is it becomes a lot harder to lose those next 20. Or for someone who's in shape, it's really difficult for them to lose those last 10 pounds.
Mm.
And it's because, you know, the body just adjusts. And specifically these hormones, again, leptin and ghrelin, they're being manipulated by, you know, basically the amount of fat that you have on your body. So what's a funny thing is that your metabolism burns at a higher rate the more weight you have on your body.
Yeah.
So the fatter you are, the higher the metabolism is going to go. And the more weight you drop, the more that metabolism slows to a crawl. So you need to kind of trick your body. You need to trick these hormones into essentially thinking that you have more weight in your body. And leptin, which is, you know, this anti-starvation hormone, is manipulated not only by the weight in your body, but in the size of these
meals.
And
you have step-by-step ways of doing that.
Right, exactly. So what we've done is essentially, you know, for anyone who really doesn't care about the science, and let's be honest, sometimes I just want to eat.
Right.
Yeah.
You eat in a way that we are going to give you the freedom to eat what you want, and then you're going to follow it up with some fasting techniques that are going to allow you to balance that out
in a way
that
I've never done the fasting.
Has no problem. The fasting is the greatest thing ever.
Really?
Let me tell you, I went 15 years of eating like 6 meals a day, diligent. I used to get up at 4:30 in the morning just so I could have a massive breakfast before training at 6 a.m.
Oh, boy.
Because I needed to digest it and I needed to not
all
puke during my training.
Yeah.
And you know what?
Because you guys talk about the pre-workout meal, which is not – it could be 2 hours before, 3 hours before.
It could be the night before.
Crazy, yeah.
Yeah.
Because like you guys were talking about, you didn't eat breakfast this morning. I don't need breakfast.
So don't eat it.
Everyone's like, well, it's the most important meal of the deal. I don't think it is.
It
not
is 100% the not. Well, it's just not true.
Well, eating immediately upon rising, that meal is not the most important meal of the day. But depending on when you actually break your fast, that meal can either have the most benefit or the most drawback. Mm. Eating it immediately upon waking, listen, people have been making great results. Bodybuilders have been getting shredded. People have been doing great eating breakfast for a certain thing.
If you're hungry when you wake up,
right.
Eat.
Yeah,
right.
And it's really like try and work with your body. But there's a ton of people who don't eat breakfast and they get better results than when they did.
Mm.
And so, you know, it's just these things like, let's say, breaking your fast immediately after your workout and allowing for greater nutrient uptake, very effective. So there's a lot of different techniques and strategies. But what we advise is really that everyone should try fasting, some form of fasting, whether it is no food at all for like 1 or 2 days per week, or whether it is the lean gains style 16-8 method where you just, you know, push your first meal back, you know, 5 or 6 hours after waking. So now you've got the 16-hour fasting.
I do that all the time.
So, yeah. So then you are actually fasting.
Okay.
And then what's really cool about this and what we kind of push this forward is that there's been some crazy research that's come out recently that's essentially saying we spend too much time eating, as in too many hours of the day. And a lot of these myths that are telling you that you have to eat at a certain time of the day, whether it's breakfast is the most important meal of the day, which it isn't necessarily, or that you can't eat late at night, which is also not true. You're not going to get fat by eating late at night. But we are just eating too often, too many hours in a day. And there was a research on the Salk Institute where they looked at mice because of you know, their biology being similar to humans and trying to see what happens if we just shorten the eating window.
Hmm.
And they had mice go on identical diets. So they ate the same amount of food, identical everything. The only difference was one group of mice ate for an 8-hour window. The other group of mice ate like humans do, you know, basically for a 16-hour window. Nothing else was different at all. The mice in the 8-hour eating group, completely healthy. The mice who were eating all day, they had higher levels of fat. They became obese. They had liver failure. They had hypertension.
Makes sense. Yeah.
And, you know, the breakdown was we started adapting it then to humans is that our body just can't handle the amount of food we're throwing at it for as many hours
as you
ever.
So for those people who don't want to fast a whole day, you once a week, you know, it's very good for you to push your first meal back 5-6 hours.
Right. I mean, that's something that you could do pretty much. I think that once you try it, you could do it like every day without a problem.
Here's my question to both of you.
Yeah.
Put you on a desert island. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you, besides water, I'm going to give you 5 foods you can bring with you. You have to eat that the rest of your life.
Oh, this
and you can only do 4 movements, 4 exercise movements. Oh. You can have weights. You can do whatever you want.
Okay.
So,
okay. All right. I'll go first. 5 foods: ribeye steak, eggs, bacon.
Jesus, that's 3.
Apples.
Apples.
I just happen to like apples and. Asparagus, probably. Of all the vegetables, that's my favorite.
So you're only giving yourself 1 vegetable. The rest is just high fat.
Well,
meat.
I'm assuming I can find some vegetation on this island.
No, sir. You
no, it's, no, then no, then the asparagus is fine. Maybe I'll audible to broccoli.
Okay.
And then
so
the
so you don't
choice.
Need so you just, as long as you have it, broccoli and asparagus, are they particularly heavy in phytonutrients? Or because I love your supplements recommendation: Greens Plus, no. Athletic Greens.
Yep.
You've got fish oil. You've got
vitamin D.
Vitamin D, I liked very much because a lot of us don't get in the sun enough.
Yep.
I thought that was really interesting. So
those they are particularly high in phytonutrients, but they're also very high in fiber. And just from the perspective of eating a lot of heavy things, meat, eggs, etc., it's generally good to balance these things out with fiber. And also, you know, meat is very – those foods are very acidic, whereas broccoli and other cruciferous vegetables are more alkaline. So just to balance out the alkalinity is
so you
is
don't
important.
You don't have any kind of a – tuber, like you don't have sweet potatoes in there. You don't have.
I would have definitely. I would have had a sweet potato. That would have been the first one. All right. So if I'm going to have to go again with. Ribeye is tough to pass up. I'll start with the ribeye.
Grass fed ribeye.
Oh, yeah. Grass fed ribeye all the way.
Why? Because cows are ruminants, everybody. They're not supposed to eat corn. Keep going.
I got to go with the eggs as well. People know me as the egg guy.
Really?
I've done a lot of egg experiments.
Adam's the egg man, yeah.
Why
yeah.
eggs?
Why
the fat
eggs?
And the protein? It's the perfect food.
Literally, I wrote an article, is this the world's healthiest food? And eggs can literally make you stronger. It can help you fight cancer. It can help you lose fat. They improve your cholesterol. I did an experiment right.
By the way, we've been hearing for years that take the yolks out of eggs. And
that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But I ate 3 eggs, whole eggs, every single day for 3 months, and I measured everything. And when I got my blood work done all the time, and at the bottom line is, at the end of it, I dropped my body fat, my cholesterol improved, my triglycerides decreased.
By the way, everybody, what's great about these two is that they wrote this book, but they couldn't be in better shape. You guys look. I mean, you are. I mean, you are clearly examples. You live what you preach. I appreciate that because it's one thing to write a book and you look, you walk in here and you got, you know, you just you're fucking basically an egghead. But you guys live. It's obvious. You know, you're in shape. But okay, so
we got the eggs, we got the ribeye. I'm going to go with broccoli. I'm going to go with kale. And I'm going to drop
kale.
The sweet potato in there.
Kale was a curveball. I didn't see kale coming.
I love me some
kale's
kale.
Kale's good.
It's good.
Oh, that's a super vegetable.
And when I build the first deserted island blender, I'm making me some kale smoothies in there too. So
Well, Joe Rogan always talks about kale smoothies.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
They're good. Actually, any smoothie with kale in it does
so
have
So give me a perfect smoothie.
You're the smoothie king, man. You go.
All right, so
something I can live on. I want to be able to live on this smoothie.
So like a super shake that you don't you could essentially just eat this food and nothing.
I want that.
Okay.
I'm gonna actually even do you one better. So I'm gonna give you a template that you can go and replicate so you can put the stuff in there that you're gonna love. Mm-hmm. So get a protein base in there. I don't care what type of powder.
How about hemp protein? How do you feel about that?
Go for the hemp protein.
Yeah, hemp protein's very good.
Is it just as good as whey or is it just
it's really interesting because when I first started talking a little bit online about trying some of the Onnit lab stuff. I know you guys know Onnit. They're hemp force. A couple of people were pointing me to very old studies that were showing that hemp had some phytoestrogenic properties, but the design
in other
was
words,
not
it,
great.
It produces estrogen.
It binds to estrogen receptors. So what I would say is that it's not definitive. And it seems not to be the case. The more research I've looked at, the less likely that seems to be. But there's a couple of very old bad studies in the same way that there's the Keys study, which says that saturated
Ansel
fat
Keys,
is
a, Ansel right. Keys did so, more to blow up
right.
to fucking to the 7 continent study or whatever. This fucking guy who is a physiologist, I think, University of Cornell, who basically said, "Hey, everybody, fucking eat a high fiber, high carb diet," and we just got fat people.
It's crazy.
What an asshole.
So hemp is pretty good. With regard to the rate of digestion, things are a little bit different. So, for example, whey protein and derivatives of it, like whey hydrolysate, those are probably the best artificial proteins to eat post-workout simply because of the digest
faster. You talk about J-Rob as being very good.
J-Rob is very good.
And yeah. I like the stamp of approval, which is the good manufacturing product.
Oh, God.
Process.
Yeah. GMP.
Look for GMP on your
yeah, any supplements GMP. It's about as difficult to get as learning Sanskrit and requires just about as much paperwork as adopting a child. It's really difficult. And not a lot of supplement companies
have it. Does J-Rob have it?
I believe, yeah. J-Rob has it, BioTrust has it, ProGrade has it. A lot of the ones we talk about in the book,
okay.
And then some of the newer companies, it just there's a process that they have to go through to get it. So hemp is good, whey is good, casein is good.
Yeah, so you want to throw a protein in there, and you know the good thing and the reason why people like whey a lot is that it's just a complete protein, meaning that it's got all the amino acids in there, which is usually the bottom line. What's important, you got the essential, you got the non-essential, they're all in there, so you're covered. So put a protein in there. Put some sort of green, so it can be kale. I will admit that spinach blends from a taste standpoint a lot easier. So you can throw a shitload of spinach in a smoothie, and you're not going to taste it at all.
Little pro tip, if the kale is boiled first, if it's like from last night's dinner, like the sautéed kale you have or the boiled kale, that is going to blend a lot easier.
Some vegetables you should sauté, cook, or boil because it breaks down the fiber, right?
And allows you to get the nutrients more.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So get some sort of green vegetable in there. I promise you it's not going to taste anywhere what you're thinking. You can do it. You don't need to cook the spinach, but you can. A lot of times I just cook all my veggies and then make good use of them. I would throw any a type of fruit in there as well.
Really? Get berries.
Yes. Berries. So
blueberries.
Blueberries, blackberries, strawberries.
Yes.
Throw.
Let's not forget the raspberry. Don't leave him
I'm
out.
Sorry.
Don't leave the raspberry out. All right.
Throw in a fat source. So it can
almonds.
Be, so it can be almonds.
Almond butter.
It can be almond butter. Oh, man.
I'm going to tell you something. I used to do this exact shake, and then I'd add some athletic greens or greens in. And when I would roll jiu-jitsu, I didn't get tired.
Oh, yeah.
The joke was –
You are bulletproof when you take this.
I swear to God, I wasn't even running or anything. I just didn't get tired, man. And people would gas out. I did not get tired.
Yeah, so, if you have proper nutrition in your body, you can go for a lot longer.
It's amazing what happens.
So fat.
So you got the vegetable, berries. You got the protein, you got the fat, you got the berries. If you want, you can put some sort of topper in there, which is going to be like cinnamon, which might help with insulin. You can have a little bit of coconut that you can get in there. So a little more of the healthy fats. It gives you a little bit of texture for people who like it. Mm-hmm. Blend that up. Make sure you got the ice cubes in there if you want. You can use almond milk. I love using almond milk to make these things.
Yep.
And you are good to go.
So
it's delicious.
So far I'm doing what I'm supposed to.
Yeah. And you're good to go.
So that's the template. So you could just pick your favorite protein, your favorite veggie, your favorite fruit, and go from there.
Move on to exercise.
Oh, yeah. So what did you want? Four movements, four exercises that
we're
doing?
Yeah, because I really like your diet plans. They're very simple. I mean, there's a lot of fat in them, but they're very good for you. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's not a lot of wasted
space. You gotta simplify everything. I mean, I think if there's a main message of this that we debunk a lot of these myths because you got a lot of dogmatic assholes running around being like, you have to do it just this way. And we're not sitting in this book
Nobody
being
does
you
it.
Have
life. Yeah. Life is too messy and complicated, and we like to live.
Right. Yeah, we want to actually remove those barriers. This book, yes, we have a plan. We have something that we prescribe, but what we are prescribing is freedom.
Right.
It's freedom from a lot of these constraints that hold you back, and it's a way that you get to pick the foods that you like from these bigger categories. You get to choose which days you're training on. You get to choose when you eat your meals or if you want to eat at night or if you want to have carbs. You get to choose even how often you eat. If you want to have 3 meals a day or 6 meals a day, that's your choice. So we're trying to kind of release these bounds that really just frustrate the hell out of everyone.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
So your four movements.
Four movements that I would do on a desert island.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to say deadlift.
Boom.
That's always number one.
I'm going to say deadlift. I'm going to say I'm going to say deadlift. I might say squat, pull-ups, and maybe dips.
Close.
Push-ups?
Definitely push-ups.
Push-ups.
Yeah.
Okay. Push-ups.
Push-ups over dips.
So push-ups over dips. My heart wants to say pull-ups.
Yeah.
But my brain is telling me that if you're just like doing a lot of push-ups, like the just you should do some scap protraction. So I might say rows.
Okay.
I would have to say.
Because you have that in the book. I mean, rows are
a big part. Yeah, I'm
one-handed.
A big,
you've got upright.
Big fan of horizontal pulling. It's just huge because like everything we do now, we sit at computers, we sit at work, we sit on the couch, we sit in the car, And these things affect our posture. You know, it shortens our hip flexors, which gives us this anterior pelvic tilt, which is where we're all ass out and like hips down. But also it really creates this like Neanderthal look, this forward rolling shoulders. And it's pretty dangerous because it puts your shoulder girdle in a compromised position where there's not a lot of – as the glide in the glenohumeral joint is just not as efficient.
And glenohumeral joint. Thank yes. you for that, sir.
Well, you know. I
know I'll be stealing that.
Yeah, please
glide over. In your glenohumeral joint is a little out of whack.
It's just a little out of whack. And so then what happens for a lot of people, the way – that any overhead pressing movements will begin to hurt. And the thing that happens is really the biceps tendon, which sits behind the shoulder, just gets in this groove. And now as you're pressing up, let's say – the muscles are the tendon is caught between the bones as they're like supposed to be gliding.
Yeah.
And that's it's really dangerous, causes a lot of shoulder injuries. So, you know, in general we always recommend that people try to like keep their shoulders back and
well it's so much
everyone is standing up a little bit taller shoulders are going back. They're like, oh man, yeah, I'm good.
Exactly.
I'm good.
All right. So you're saying rows?
Rows, push ups, deadlifts. I don't know that I would go squats.
I would
go sprints.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
We're close. We're similar, but mine is slightly different. So I'm gonna go deadlift.
Yeah.
I will go pull up. I will go push up.
Thank
and
you.
Instead of sprints, I'm gonna go prowler because
you're gonna prowl.
Loves the prowler.
I'm gonna prowl because listen,
hands and knees. Hands and feet.
I'm gonna be.
It's basically pushing a weight sled.
I gotta be in condition.
Of course.
I gotta be in condition, and you can do so. You can pull it.
By the way, you might have to push your own grain mill, even though you don't eat grains. When you're on a fucking desert island, you need you some bread, man.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay. All of the things that are really shitty for you in real life could come in pretty handy on a desert island.
I got my sweet potatoes, though.
You can make sweet potatoes.
They say sweet potatoes are the most nutritious, one of the most nutritious foods, right? I mean, is that true?
They are loaded, but I will warn people, if you find yourself sensitive from a stomach standpoint to the sweet potato, remove the skin.
I was just going to say that.
Remove
exact thing.
The skin because it can cause quite a bit of gas. And everyone loves sweet potatoes.
You know,
I don't
break down beans well, and I've always been told beans are good night and they cause major problems.
Tim has an interesting tip about boiling beans. I want to say with like I'd have to look in 4-hour body, but with a tablespoon of baking soda and essentially it just helps the part of the bean that causes the gas and the intestinal discomfort is really like any like the hulls or the exterior skin, and apparently the baking soda helps that become more permeable, I would say.
Okay.
So I really don't know the exact science for it. It's been a while since I've looked at that chapter in 4-HB, but
4-HB being the 4-hour
4-hour body by Timothy Ferris. I think it was a number one New York Times bestseller. Worth reading.
Yeah.
And
in a way, you could read 4-hour body. You could read something by Gary Taubman. You could read your book, and you're set. I mean, I always say to people, if you want to
– That's mighty company. Thank
well,
you.
Well, but if you want to learn about – I always say to people, if you want to learn about how your body works, it really doesn't take a whole lot of effort. Read three books. Read the right three books.
Right.
And we're going to put this book on the website because people always ask.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. It's not on Audible yet.
It is, actually.
It is on Audible.
We read it.
We had to record the audio version of the book, which is just like a hilarious experience in general because you're sitting in a room and you're just like – you get stuck on this one sentence, and the more you try to concentrate on not fucking it up, the more you fuck it
up.
That's
acting, baby.
So it's
I don't know how you do it. I will apologize to everyone. The one thing that we didn't get to happen is we don't have Arnold reading the forward, and we don't have either one of us.
Been nice.
I could read it. Let's see. let me see. That's good. Thank you. Let me see if I can
brought the wrong
one
book.
No. Arnold, I don't do it well. Started in the most primitive way you can imagine, before the championships of my move to America, the long before anyone talked about the golden age of bodybuilding, it became with a fantasy in the forests of Austria.
That's amazing.
Not very good.
It's better than we could do. By the way, I just want to point out what idiots we are. We brought you a copy of the book. That was fucking signed for someone else, so we'll have to bring
it. I like it. It says Too Iron.
Too Iron.
It's like born in Rome.
Born in Rome. What a bunch of numbskulls.
I actually like that.
I want it now.
Now you can have it.
Now it's yours.
Item.
I love it. It's like I sell t-shirts.
Yeah.
And I had a bunch made, and they spelled my name wrong. They spelled D-R-I-A-N. But I sold a shitload of them without realizing it.
Yeah.
And then like the fourth day, I was like, holy shit. They're
a collector's item now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm bringing them to Canada. I'm just going to sell them.
They're not going to know Canadians.
Right. Come on with those Canadians. Great, great audiences. Well, we've covered basically what you'd eat. Yeah. We've covered your movement. We've covered sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you guys, I mean, how do you guys live your lives? You're pretty busy and stuff. I mean, what is your workout typically?
It is right now. It's kind of a lower body, upper body conditioning type approach. So it's actually really similar to what you get in the book. We'll be honest. We're kind of lab rats, and the concepts were proven out and trained about 4 days a week.
Right.
And
you've worked with pro athletes and stuff too, right?
Yeah.
Which is a whole different thing, isn't it? In a way,
they're not human beings.
Yeah, they're not.
They're freaks. Like the two main difference for anyone who's interested in training professional athletes, the two main differences are. Speed of implementation and speed of learning. So, like, you know, you demonstrate a movement to a pro athlete once, and then he does it better than you because they're just
physical
movement
geniuses.
Their adaptation is incredible. The way they pick up movement patterns is incredible, and like, you know, the transference from like the first time they do the exercise to the fourth time 2 weeks later is unbelievable in terms of how quickly they master that movement pattern. Yeah. So learning
the
movement patterns
and mastering.
Focus
and intensity is amazing. Wow. One of my favorite things was, you know, when I worked for magazines, I worked for Men's Health for a while, I was the editorial director for LiftStrong.com. I got to go and train with these athletes as a guy who's just going and putting myself through it, because we see the stuff on the playing field. We don't get to see behind the scenes. So I'm like, let's just go and have me experience. And the intensity and focus that they bring to it is ridiculous. You know what? The stories that I could share from every athlete is just amazing. But like one of my favorite ones is Drew Brees.
Oh, this is great.
Drew Brees.
Oh,
you know,
by the way, I just love that dude because you know it's one thing to like Peyton Manning at 6'5", 235. Drew Brees, 6 foot tall.
Six feet standing on some platforms.
Is that right?
He's closer to like 5'11".
5'11", and what is he, about 200 pounds?
Like buck 90.
That's
200
ridiculous.
In the offseason. Yeah. He is probably the fiercest competitor I've ever seen. Just the intensity is amazing. And he was doing this drill in San Diego with his trainer, Todd Durkin, and it was basically on just mental acuity and being able to focus. So what Todd was doing was tossing a playing card, into the air while he would ask Drew a question. So he had to answer the question correctly and swipe this playing card out of the air at the same time. And if he either dropped the playing card or answered the question wrong, he got it wrong. So Drew is going and he's got to catch it with just one hand at a time. So at the first one, he's trying to catch it with his right hand, and he gets 9 out of 10 on the first one. And the second one, he's got to catch it with his left hand. So it is really hard to snag a playing card out of thin air.
Yeah.
And he's 9 out of 9. And the last one goes up. He answers the question. He tries to swipe it, and he misses. And he drops the loudest F-bomb I've ever heard, and is just furious. This guy's training. He's just doing this fun, like, mental acuity thing, and is just furious. He's like, I want to go again. And this guy, and then he goes, pushes. It's amazing to see.
It has
what
nothing
makes
to do with that card. It has to do with who he is as a person.
Exactly right. But you know what? There's two sides of the athlete coin. There's the Drew Breeses, who are crazy dedicated. And when you work with a number of professional athletes, you'll see a lot of guys like him. You'll also see that many, many athletes are not necessarily successful because of what they do, but rather in spite of what they do. And
some people are physical freaks. LeBron James is ridiculous.
And there's some football players, like really, really talented wide receivers who, you know, can't teach speed, who just have these, you know, incredible height and these great physiques, this great
balls
physiology.
Balls
of
fast twitch muscle.
Yeah. And they
Dwight
do.
Dwight Freeney. Man, I worked out with Dwight Freeney and he destroyed me. We were training for like 2.5 hours with his trainer, Ryan Capretta. Unbelievable. The guy's a freak of nature. It's ridiculous.
I always say that. I've rolled with some top flight fighters in UFC, like Nate Marquardt. I shouldn't even say I've rolled with them because it's ridiculous. It's like they were giggling and they were tossing me around.
Using one
but leg, you get a sense of how strong, like and Schaub, like Brendan Schaub, you get a sense of how strong, or Mayhem Miller, you get a sense of how strong these guys really are compared to you, like what a real tough guy is.
Yeah.
And I don't give a shit how long you've wrestled or boxed. You get in the ring with those fucking
dudes,
you're done.
It's over.
They will kill you with their bare hands.
Right.
And every man should have that experience, because it would make you more polite when dealing with other human beings. When you realize how quickly another man can not only impose his will on you, he can kill you, or if he wants, he could probably fuck you. All right? And that's a very humbling thing for any man to accept, which is why we invented weapons. But it's just,
to equalize.
That's right. You know, fuck you. If I have a knife or a gun, it's a different story. But the bottom line is, It's a very, very humbling thing with pro athletes.
For sure, yeah.
But this book really, you didn't write this for pro athletes at all. You wrote this book for people, in my opinion, who have not realized their potential.
Precisely correct. I mean, you know, we looked at a lot of pro athletes because I think it's always really important to look at the spectrum and look at both sides and pull from the extremes and sort of apply that information however you can to the mainstream in the same way that you look at a study on mice or rats and then you try to apply that to humans. So there is a lot to be learned on the fringes. But in general, we looked at about, I want to say like 322 guys between the ages of 20 years old and probably 48, 49 years old. And what happened was that we found that guys as young as 22 were experiencing the same problems as guys as old as 49.
In what sense?
Low testosterone, low sex drive. 22-year-old dudes.
That's crazy.
Listen,
man.
22-year-old guys in college,
I mean,
have
40,
a hot girlfriend.
I'm 46 and I'm still a fucking animal.
Thank goodness.
Spread that message. Because that people think that that's abnormal.
Right.
They think you're abnormal.
It's not abnormal in a lot of countries. You know, it's pretty normal.
Right, precisely. So 22-year-old dudes in college, their senior year of college, we had this one kid, had this beautiful girlfriend who like slept with him in his dorm every night. They fucked like twice a month. And not only is that just like atypical or abnormal,
it's also a waste.
Right? Because like, first of all, I mean, if you're a regular guy, there's a threshold after which you're not fucking 21-year-old girls anymore, and like, right. You should just experience that part of your youth.
Experience it.
It's really part of your growth as a man.
When you get to be my age, you like an older woman anyway. I like somebody in her 30s with a sex swing who's had a couple divorces under her belt.
Yeah, so that's actually not older if you're 46.
Yeah. I was going to say.
Older than 21,
oh, no,
sure.
Oh, yeah. People talk about cougars being 36. That's young to me, man. I'll take that all day. I like a 36-year-old over a 22-year-old any day because they've just forgotten everything.
Right.
That's a good thing. Sorry.
So You have guys as young as 22 experiencing these problems with low testosterone and exhibiting it with regard to low sex drive. And this is damaging on so many levels. Not only is the low testosterone fucking with you physically in terms of making you gain fat, making you lose muscle, making you weak and slow and fat and all these other things, but it can lead to depression, anxiety, even thoughts of suicide. So that's the stuff that's going on in here. But the way that externalizes it, it will ruin your relationship. Because especially if you're that age, if there's no sex, there's no intimacy.
Well, that's why in your book you speak so much about optimizing your hormones.
Yeah.
That's really the theme of this book, it seems to me.
Yes, absolutely.
That you the conversation has got to start and end with what your hormones – where your hormones are and where they should be, right?
I mean, right. It's having optimized hormones allows you to be the best version of yourself.
And by the way, for you guys, it's to rehash: mm-hmm. get enough sleep, eat a lot of fat in your diet, especially saturated fats, which means not only eggs and meat, but also the fat that's in animal protein, but also raw almonds, avocados, that kind of stuff.
Yep. Yeah, fatty fish as well.
Right, and then correct movement. Heavy weights you talk about. I love it.
Yeah,
like one of the things you talk about is like, you know, high reps and it gets you shredded. There's nothing wrong with heavy weight. I get more energy when I move a lot of weight.
Sure, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of benefit to doing things both ways, you know, with high rep training. You know, Arnold and company used to say that doing reps of like sets of 15 reps would get you shredded. That wasn't exactly true, but now, you know, science has shown us that if you adapt that and do it in a circuit fashion, you've got what we call metabolic resistance training, and we feature it in the book. So all of these things have merit, but if you could only do one thing, lift heavy, not like one rep max where you're, you know, like putting a lot of stress on your joints, but five reps or thereabouts and multiple sets, a lot of volume. Because these things are hugely important. Not only is being strong – there's literally no drawback to being strong. There's just
it's
none.
It's so awesome.
And by the way, you guys also go through the exercise. I think you're the one who's you know, you're demonstrating.
I'm demonstrating all the exercises.
You're a thick kid, by the way. And you kind of break down, you know, sort of all the movements.
We try. So those are the main components that, you know, the lifestyle, the training, nutrition, but it all starts with hormones. And if your hormones are optimized, if your testosterone is where it should be or even above for your age, you're going to have higher confidence and you're going to take more risks. It's these really strange, like, cycles that feed into themselves. It's been shown that men who have higher testosterone take more risks, and it's also been shown that taking more risks leads to higher testosterone. And these are the people who are more likely to get job placements or advancements because these are qualities that
I think you have a great quote, which is it's easier to beg for forgiveness than to ask for permission.
Absolutely.
Yes,
yeah.
Funny, yeah.
Yeah, so it really is true, you know, because...
But you're right about that. I mean, you know, what you're saying, and again, it's an ambitious claim, but it's true. When you take care of your physical body, it will manifest itself in a more successful life. I mean, it goes back to Aristotle. I mean, you know, we are physical creatures, and we are as much as we are a mind, we are also a physical entity. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know how to take care of this machine... and it's not that hard, and it's not that expensive. In some ways, it's cheaper, yeah, and takes less time. You know, you're going to have – it's going to manifest itself in a more successful life because you're going to be more yourself.
It's basic human psychology too.
Yeah.
You know, we have this issue of learned helplessness where we try and do something and we fail. And then we think we're just going to fail at everything else. And we can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And
right.
The best place to start of creating success – is with your own body because you have the most control over it.
Right.
You control this. No one else is going to stand in your way other than you, other than these perceived barriers. But if you can go ahead and you can experience success in this, that's positive reinforcement. So now you're reinforcing that behavior that is good. So you're going to keep on getting in better, better shape, more muscular, stronger, more shredded. But now you've suddenly got a lot more confidence. Confidence from the outward appearance of like, damn, I'm looking good. But confidence also from your ability to succeed. And that creates a physiological trigger that will allow you to have more confidence outwardly in how you push yourself in your job, how you push yourself with women or socially. So you have to see that these things are directly connected, and you have the psychological and the physiological working together in concert. Whereas if you take these steps and change your body, you really can change your life, and it's not that far of an advance. Like, you can even look to the science to prove it out. If you want to be the scientific guy, or you can just look at the person who is – fit and seems to have it all, got the good looking girls, got the great job. We know that from science again that people who are perceived as better looking are making a lot more money. At what point do you stop saying this is a coincidence, this guy's got it so good, I got a raw deal? No, you create
action,
that opportunity.
Taking correct action.
Yeah, precisely.
Give me for guys who don't have the money to get testosterone tested, give me some signs of when you know your testosterone is optimal.
Low sex drive is the biggest one. I mean, if you're 30 or under and you're not waking up with an erection, it could be a warning sign. I just say this because I'm a giant fucking 12-year-old, but I think that boners are probably the greatest like barometer on the gauge of good health because
that,
it really
makes sense.
It does. If you have trouble getting aroused, if you have trouble achieving orgasm or maintaining arousal, these are signs that something could be wrong. Now, it could be low testosterone. It could also be something as weird and insidious as chronically elevated insulin levels, which could lead to erectile dysfunction. So sex is the big one. If you don't want sex, if you're noticing that your attitude towards sex has changed dramatically in the past several months, that's one thing. Fatigue is another huge thing.
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, it's funny. People walk around tired. I mean, I notice that sometimes. Like, I'll just be like, why the fuck am I tired? I've only slept 6 hours. You know, there's so many of those things where you just realize that you're just tired.
Right. So it's, you know, the body is – the homeostatic processes that happen are really – I don't know why I went Canadian with processes. That's weird.
You're out.
I was going to Canada. Because this book is also for Canadians.
It is.
Canadian approved.
So listen, my Canadian friends.
Right.
The homeostatic processes that occur in your body are really – they're very simple fundamentally. I mean they're in their activity they're very complex in their mechanisms. But when you look at the source, they're very simple. If you're not sleeping enough, your testosterone is going to be lower. But obviously this is not desirable from an evolutionary perspective because it's going to prevent propagation of the species. And so your body exhibits this symptom, and that's fatigue, the fact that you need more sleep. Mm-hmm. And in a perfect world, you would listen to your body, you'd get more sleep, you'd feel better rested, and from there your testosterone levels would increase. So, you know, in a very roundabout but very true way, fatigue is a very real marker of low testosterone, or can be, because if you're fatigued, you're probably tired and you're probably not sleeping enough, and there's that. What would you say some other good ones?
I think the fatigue and the sex drive are probably going to be the two biggest ones that are going to be easiest to tell. Another one that's going to be when you start taking the right steps, when you start eating the right way, or when you start training hard, and if your strength isn't going up, if you're not losing weight, those are these good indicators that something is broken with the system. When you do everything right, or at least are dramatically better from where you were, you should see changes. You should have that more energy. You should be getting stronger. You should be losing weight. And that's when something is broken within the system that, all right, I've just gone completely from a caloric standpoint and I'm dropping my calories down low enough where I should be losing weight, but I'm not. You know, it's not that, your body isn't capable of losing weight.
Right.
We all are. Right. So I think that's when, again, just as Roman was saying, if there's these breakdowns in the system where you know the way you should be feeling or you know what should be happening and you're not seeing it, it's a problem. So if you are taking right steps and you know what those right steps are, especially if you're talking and you don't see results, it's probably a hormonal issue. If you have fatigue or just you are having those lulls in energy, there's probably an issue. And if you don't get a boner.
If you don't get a boner, I haven't heard that word used in a long time.
Right? We need to
bring
that
back. By the way, Brennan Schaub sent me a text. I don't think he can make it. He got lost on the way here. Brig Brown on his motherfucking way to two of you guys. A little bit of traffic with this big old dick is coming. Brennan Schaub. That's his appearance. Guys, we are, I think, out of time, but I want to thank you guys. This has been most enlightening. You are always welcome back on the Brian Callen Show. Get the book, Man 2.0, Engineering the Alpha, A Real World Guide to an Unreal Life. And I really enjoyed it, and you guys know your shit, and I like that you live in L.A. because I'll be calling you and abusing your expertise.
Fair enough. We're going to pack on some size on that, buddy.
I need it, dude.
Yeah. It's happening.
I need it.
It's the Brian Callen experiment.
I don't know. I don't think I can. Let's do a fucking video about
it. That'll be fun. That'll be a lot of fun. Right. You're going to do a documentary now.
I'm down. I'm down. All right. Thanks, guys, for listening. Later.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Callen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Brian Callen Comedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.